This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hi everyone, it's David here. I wanted to let you all know that I'm joining some great friends of mine in supporting an incredible campaign on the All In Challenge to help raise much needed money for coronavirus relief. There are so many families being affected by this terrible situation who are struggling to find money for food. And we want to support some brilliant charities who are doing some incredible work every single day under such difficult circumstances. So, with my Inter Miami family, I want to offer you the chance to win a unique experience. You and four of your friends will play against my five-a-side team at the beautiful new Inter Miami training facility. You will get a VIP tour of our stadium to see the amazing facilities we have built for our new club. Miami is a very special place, and I know this will be an incredible experience. I think it will be a great day, so maybe you fancy your chances against my team. So let's see what you have got. Please go to allinchallenge.com to find out more, and please know that 100% of your donations will go to the relief efforts. I would like to nominate my former clubs, Manchester United, Real Madrid, and Paris Saint-Germain, to join me and go all in for coronavirus relief. See you soon, and I can't wait to line up against the winner. Stay safe, everybody.
On the ball on BFM 89.9.
That was David Beckham giving you the opportunity to play against him in a five-a-side to raise money for coronavirus relief efforts. Yeah, me and the guys are actually in lockdown personal program training hard for Beck's tournament. And by the guys, I mean Bob Holmes. Hello, Bob.
Hi, everybody.
Craig Wilkie's
there. I'm not training too hard.
No. But you're lifting that glass really well, Bob. Craig Wilkie is also here. Hello, Craig.
Good evening, everybody. I've been doing regular laps to the fridge.
And Keishnan, what have you been doing to keep up with the training?
I'm just looking forward to seeing Bob coming out of retirement.
Okay. So is Bex, I think.
Yeah, true. So much to talk about. Let's start with the big news of the week, which is UEFA had a meeting with their 55 associations this midweek, and they have decided that the UEFA Champions League and the Europa League finals are going to be played in August. So they're looking for domestic seasons to finish in July. That sounds reasonable, doesn't it?
Reasonable, but a bit optimistic, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, very. I didn't want to say that.
I mean, now they've set the 29th of August for the Champions League final. It doesn't leave much room for manoeuvre, does it? And they're banking on a resumption in June. And I don't think many of Europe's leagues are ready. Certainly not the Premier League. I think it'll be July before they can even think about it. I mean, the players need 3 weeks at least. I mean, they've been exercising and all that sort of stuff at home, but they're nowhere near match fit. And then there's the logistics of the whole thing. And the more you think about it, as David Moyes has been saying, you know, the more difficult it looks, doesn't it? I don't know what the other guys think.
Yeah, well, the reason they're saying in August is because they think travel is most likely during that period. When I read that, I laughed on the inside, sadly, to myself. Craig, do you reckon it's going to happen? Do you reckon leagues can be done by the end of July latest?
I don't think leagues are going to be done by the end of July. The major headache that UEFA have is that there's so many different countries involved. I mean, even in the Champions League, we still have representatives from Italy, Germany, Spain, France, and England. So, and those are essentially the most effective countries in Europe. And then it gets even more complicated when you add the Europa League into it, because then you've got still representatives from Greece, Denmark, Turkey, Ukraine, Switzerland, Austria. So trying to get all of that done and dusted by the end of July in order to concentrate on European competitions just seems to me like it's going to be too much.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I think UEFA, the one thing I will say about UEFA is I think everybody's kind of rushing to try and make decisions right now, and it's too uncertain to do that. So they're right to try and keep the window open to have a bit of flexibility in it, to see how far leagues can get, because I think some leagues definitely will resume by then. Maybe some will even complete by then. I think they've also left open the option that leagues could still be playing in August while the European competitions resume. And also the prospect of either the quarterfinals or the semifinals being played as one leg games, which actually would be tremendously exciting if that were to be the case.
All right, let's move on. Big news of the week. Man United have redrawn the budget, Keishnan. Ed Woodward reckons, you know, after counting the coffers, the money in there, there's not going to be enough. They probably won't go for Harry Kane at £200 million.
I mean, like, if there's one part of Man United that I'd completely trust Ed Woodward with, it's probably the financial side of things. He's been really good at drawing up budgets in the past. He's been really diligent with bringing in sponsorship. And it's probably one of the reasons why, in the context of the current situation, when you look at clubs in the Premier League, Man United, from very early on in the onset of this crisis, a lot of the decisions that they made, a lot of the public communication that was made about how they were going to financially deal with the crisis, whether it's about, you know, keeping their staff on furlough or continuing to pay essential workers and part-time workers. A lot of it has been really, really positive so far because of the financial prowess that Man United have. But, yep, of course, this COVID-19 situation, even a club as big as Man United, you're going to be affected by it at some point. So the redrawing of the budget is not a surprising thing. I mean, so as long as its main effects are on your transfer budgets, you're still in a pretty good position.
Yeah.
You know, you imagine a lot of the other clubs, they're not even thinking about transfers at the moment. They're just thinking about, you know, bare minimum survival. And it's good that you, if you're Man United, it's still positive that you're not in that discussion just yet.
It's all set, Bob, for United to whisk Kylian Mbappe away from PSG, right?
Well, what we haven't said yet is the question of the transfer values, the fees. I mean, everybody's taking a pay cut. And I think the selling clubs, are also going to have to take a cut.
Yeah.
I mean, the idea of anyone going for 200 million or 150 million even now, I think is ridiculous. And So, Daniel Levy, for example, if he thought he was going to pay for the stadium by selling Harry Kane, I think he's got another thing coming. And as you say, United seem to have pulled out of the running for him. Who else can afford him? Because Real Madrid have also said they can't afford him. So I think these clubs and players, they're going to have to accept that the transfer fees are going to go down considerably, maybe even crash, which many people don't think is a bad thing.
Some reality's got to hit home. Moving on with the news of the week then, Song Hyun-min has started military service in South Korea, 3-week mandatory national service. This is a lot better than the 21 months that most South Koreans do. Of course, Son was involved in winning the Olympic gold. Was it Olympic gold? No. SEA Games.
Asian goal. Games.
Asian Games gold.
Sorry, that was it. And 3 months, it's a lot. Apparently, he's on the lovely island of Jeju, Craig. I mean, Kushti.
Yeah, like you say, it's a lot better than the 21 months that he was looking at before. And actually, I remember when he was playing in that Asian Games tournament that you could see the look in his eyes, the pressure that he was under and the strain of, because it's only if he brought home a gold was the military service reduced to this level. So yeah, I mean, I just wonder if they're practicing social distancing while he's going about his various tasks there. I mean, I read in the reports that what he's actually going to have to do includes, he's going to be exposed to tear gas, and he's going to have to go on long hikes, and he's also going to be taught how to fire a gun, which, I mean, in Scotland, we just call that a Friday night out. But I guess in South Korea, that counts as military training. But I mean, on a serious note, what a result for Spurs. Because, I mean, the prospect of losing a player like him at a crucial part of the season has now gone.
Yeah.
And he's been able to do it at an ideal time. So yeah, it's a massive, massive bonus for them.
Good point.
I just want to point out, Ross, that it was Malaysia that almost stopped Son from winning that Asian Games. We beat them in the group stages 2-1.
Correct.
You could see the frustration in Son's eyes in Indonesia at that point as his, you know, South Korea fell to a 2-1 defeat against Malaysia. Thankfully for Spurs, thankfully for him, they bounced back and they ended up winning the entire tournament.
Yep. Yep. Well done, Son. Well done, Spurs. He's due back apparently middle of May, and as if national service is not good enough, when he gets back, he's going to meet up with Jose Mourinho. Sheffield United boss agrees to a pay deferral. Only a matter of time. Chris Wilder always does the right thing. Him, the chief executive, Stephen Bettis, have agreed a partial pay and bonus deferral to assist the club's cash flow. Sensible, but then they have been sensible all along, haven't they, Sheffield United?
Very sensible club, and contrasting somewhat with Arsenal, you have to say. I know we're going to come onto that, but no, Sheffield United have been an absolute credit to the Premier League. I mean, they came up, they were everybody's favourites to go back down, and they've not only surprised, amazed everyone, I mean, they've got a pretty good chance of getting a Champions League spot if we carry on with the season, but they are exemplary off the field as well. And all credit to them. And I think it's just desserts because they were unfairly punished by the Carlos Tevez affair.
Yeah.
Don't forget, has cost them about 30 million quid and relegation to the third tier at one point. So they paid dearly for that, but now they're back where they belong.
Brilliant stuff. Let's sidetrack. Bob mentioned Arsenal. Let's talk about Arsenal now. Apparently, Arsenal have announced squad pay cut. That's for most of the Arsenal first team players. Keish, I understand 5 of them have not agreed to 12.5% pay cut over the next year. And one of those 5 is Mesut Ozil. Now, I'm just reading off Twitter and stuff here, but yeah, they're pointing fingers at Mesut, aren't they?
I mean, they are. And he's obviously an easy scapegoat, right? Given the context of his relationship with the club, his performance with the club, the kind of relationship that he has with fans as well over the last 24 months or so. But I'm just trying to be a bit more neutral here in evaluating the situation because we're in a situation where it is difficult for everyone. Right. And you know, when we talk about money, it's such a gray area, especially. And on one hand, obviously, if we are to believe everything that's said on social media from a black and white perspective, that Mesut Ozil is at fault, that Mesut Ozil is being completely selfish in this case. Right. But on the other end, we don't know the details of this negotiation.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. Because
true,
the negotiations isn't just about pay cut. I'm pretty sure there'll be discussions about what's expected of them. Will there be a shift in their key performance index? Right, and we don't even know what the situation of these players
but we're just assuming. Sorry, let me jump in and say what we can assume is that it's disgusting in the first place that there are 5 who oppose 12.5% pay cut. Let's leave Arsenal now. Sad story. Lokeren in Belgium, they're a second division team in Belgium. They are on the verge of bankruptcy. They have failed to find an investor to help them avoid the threat of bankruptcy. Apparently, they owe something like 5 million euros, 4.4 million pounds. And according to the Belgian media, players are owed wages, debts to suppliers are outstanding. The chairman says they're not going to survive. They all that history is going to disappear, and it's because of COVID. That's tragic.
Yeah. I mean, 5 million is loose change, isn't it?
Right.
In modern football, and a lot of Belgian players are earning that in a few weeks. I mean, you'd think that they would have passed the hat around to help them out, and I fear that this is the first of many. I mean, many English clubs are going to go under for sure, and this is the tragedy of this. Clubs that have been going for some, in some cases, 100 years or more, are going to fall for a few million, like Bury did last year. Nothing to do with COVID, that, of course. But they're just up the road from Manchester United, Manchester City, I mean, it's a bus ride away, and they didn't lift a finger to help them out.
Yeah.
And this is the great tragedy. I mean, there was hope, or there still is hope, that this COVID thing would actually bring people together, bring clubs together, see a new mood and all that. Well, you know, jury's still out on that, but it looks as if Loughran are going to be the first casualties.
Okay, let's leave it there with our big news of the week. First break, when we come back, we're going to tell you about an ingenious idea that a top Danish club has post-COVID. Stay tuned.
Worth a try, and he's always prepared to give it a go.
On the ball on BFM 89.9.
Deserved a goal, that. Love the return pass. Just wide.
On the ball on BFM 89.9.
Hey, welcome back. Bob, Keish and Craig Wilkie in the house, or rather in our houses, in lockdown. And you heard the football news of the week. Big news is that Danish club FC Midtjylland is going to create a drive-in for their fans. Now, apparently, Danish football is set to return very, very soon. It's going to be played behind closed doors. FC Midtjylland have this ingenious idea of setting up two big screens at either end of the stadium, obviously facing outwards towards the car park. They've got room for what? 10,000? No, is it 10,000 cars? Something like that. No, 2,000 cars, which will allow 10,000 people to watch the game. Now, when the game's going on, obviously it's beamed out, they're going to film what's going on outside and beam that back into the stadium for atmosphere. When I read that, I thought, absolutely genius. Keish.
Yeah, absolutely brilliant, Ross. I completely agree as well. I think football in general, we're just entering a whole new period where it's going to be uncomfortable. We're going to be consuming football. And as an industry, as a sport, it's going to go through a period of just complete, a whole new shift of changes. And to cope with these changes, you need ideas like this. The football is quite literally nothing without fans, right? And how do you keep football going, but at the same time, reciprocate the relationship that it has with fans and that fans have with the players? And I think this is a brilliant idea, because not just that it satisfies the, you know, fans' craving for a proper football experience, but at the same time, you give the players a semblance of an atmosphere for them to keep playing as well. And it's quite similar to that idea that I think Borussia Mönchengladbach have in the Bundesliga, where they are, you know, it's nothing to do with sound, but it's more about the way the stadium looks. They're going to place placards of fans in more seats across the stadium. So if the Bundesliga resumes behind closed doors, and if they do beam the atmosphere through the speakers, when players look at the stands, they will see placards of fans seated all across in the season tickets. And I think that's a brilliant idea as well. And we need more of these ideas if we're going to get football through this period of uncertainty.
I mean, they're talking about the Superliga in Denmark restarting 17th of May. Obviously, behind closed doors with a lot of restrictions. But genius idea. I mean, you'd totally expect this from a Scandinavian country, right? Do you know what I mean? Flat packed and yeah, stuff.
Absolutely. I think it's fantastic. And as Keish mentioned, there's going to be more and more need for this, actually, through this period of clubs are going to have to find creative ways to keep fans involved and to generate revenue as well. And one thing we do know about football fans is that they're so loyal, they'll support their football teams through thick and thin. They'll be prepared to reach into their wallets and still pay up for any sort of experience that they're going to get something out of and that can also help the club. So I'm sure there's going to be a great response to this. And I was just reading through some of the details. Fantastic. They're going to have a separate section reserved for away fans who can actually, you know, come up and be a part of this. And then I think there's also somebody said, you know, well, so what happens if somebody needs the loo? Well, apparently you can flash your lights and a steward will come along and escort you to the toilet and bring you back to your car. So they've really thought of everything for this particular initiative. So, yeah, good luck to them. And I think we'll see something similar happening elsewhere.
I know Bob Holmes is thinking, I know what you're thinking, Bob. I'm going to say yes. There'll probably be a beer van driving around the car park.
Well, I was thinking of that and other things too. I was wondering whether that would work at Old Trafford with 75,000 people.
It's a long way to drive from London. That's the problem.
An imaginary 75,000 people. No, it is brilliant. I was thinking earlier this week when we were pretty much resigned to football coming back behind closed doors and being behind them for a while. So what are they going to do? And on TV, it would be possible to superimpose crowds on the screen, just as they do adverts and all that. But then I was thinking, well, the players wouldn't benefit from that, would they? But now I hear this, and I can see that, yeah, the players could be fooled into thinking that there are people there as well. So, I mean, fine-tune it a bit, and maybe this will be the answer. Because I'm not really looking forward to watching these games behind closed doors. I mean, we've seen a few when a club's been punished and what have you. And there is zero atmosphere. And I think the players rarely get up for it.
Yeah.
You know, it is a pale shadow of its real self, isn't it? So this stuff like this is brilliant. Midtjylland, by the way, I'm surprised you United fans haven't mentioned it. This is the team that Marcus Rashford made his memorable debut against a couple of years ago. Don't you remember?
Well done,
Bob. Never thought they'd come out with something like this.
Genius. Keish, I understand. They're also talking about when they restart football, they're going to be wearing masks and gloves. Is that a bit silly or is that sensible as well? Because, I mean, football is spit all the time, wouldn't it? Wouldn't those masks just be full of gloves?
I mean, I think masks might be a bit tricky because obviously you need, it would disrupt your breathing and all that kind of stuff. So there will be, you would need to figure out a way to solve that. But pretty stringent social distancing policies will have to be put in place, even if you're going to resume play behind closed doors. Because football is ultimately a contact sport. Right. And at some point, it's very easy if an individual player has that disease, it's very easy for it to be transmissible within a football pitch. So you've got to still take strong precautionary measures to handle that. But hey, I mean, I know it sounds like a weird new world that we're entering. But honestly, having lived in a world without football for the last 37 days, for the last 2 months, I'd
You're
rather
counting
take
them,
football... I am, Bob. I really am. I mean, I'd rather watch football behind closed doors than not have football at all.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Craig, anything to add to that? Well, do you reckon it'll work in Scotland? Actually, the football behind closed doors would be all right at the Etihad, wouldn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Wow. I think so. No, actually, one of the reasons why I think this is a really good thing is that I've heard this argument being made that some countries, some governments perhaps, are reluctant to permit football coming back behind closed doors because they're concerned that fans will gather in any case. Either they'll gather outside the stadium in order to try and generate some atmosphere, or they might gather in large groups somewhere in order to watch the game together. And I think that would just be a really unfortunate, nonsensical reason to stop games going ahead if for other reasons it was deemed possible from a health point of view and everything else. So I agree with the guys that it's absolutely not the same to have football behind closed doors, but I would much rather see it come back, not least to help and support those clubs that will need it to come back sooner rather than later and the revenue that they'll get from it, than not have it come back at all. So the more of this type of scheme that we can dream up that will allow that to happen and will make it better for both fans and players, then so much the better.
Anyone else got a good idea?
Well, no, I was just wondering whether the social distancing will have any effect on the wrestling at set pieces, especially corners, whether players will be grappling quite as enthusiastically as they did before. Be interesting to see.
I thought Bob was mentioning WWE for a sec.
Yeah, that's what I thought we were going.
Yeah, I was too, yeah.
That's an essential service, that one.
And spare a thought for rugby. I mean, what are they going to do when they come back?
My goodness, yeah. Well, no, seriously, though, football, will it be even less contact from now onwards, do you reckon?
I mean, apparently you're already seeing it in some of the leagues that are ongoing at the moment, like the one in Belarus And there was a league that was still ongoing in Burundi as well until very recently. That was put on
hold. You've been watching, Akish.
I mean, I've been
You've been watching these leagues.
Belarus, yes, I have.
Don't give too much away, Keish. We're going to a break.
But the point is that in a lot of these leagues that are still continuing, and the ones that continued until very recently, apparently after COVID-19 became a problem, you really saw a reduction in a lot of this active physical contact within the game, like tackling and grappling for space and the ball and stuff like that.
Okay.
I'm sure it's in the back of players' minds, but when you get out on the pitch, I think it's hard that you're just going to, if the ball's there, you're going to go for it. If the man's there, you're going to, I'm not sure it's going to change behavior that much, to be honest.
Yeah, true. All right. Break time. When we come back, we talk about Belarus football's new global following. We've got the chairman of one of their fan clubs as our guest. Next.
What about that clearance off the line? How important did that turn out to be in the end?
On the ball on BFM 89.9.
It is a fine goal. Fine header, fine goal.
On the ball on BFM 89.9.
Hey, thanks for sticking with us. On the ball in lockdown still, yeah. Craig Wilkie, Bob Holmes and Keishnan, in their homes. I was going to say in the studio. It's a crutch. I'm looking forward to being back in the studio again. But as usual, get in touch via Twitter. It's at BFM Radio. Also follow us on social media. It's BFM Football on Instagram and on Facebook as well. Just before the break, Keish mentioned Belarusian football. And it has a brand new global following, Belarusian football. It's the only league that's going on in the at the moment. I was reading all about it. Virus has killed 30,000 people in Europe. Apparently, they're not believing the figures in Belarus. Keish, can you jump in here and just tell us why this league is running first of all?
It's ridiculous, Ross. It's both ridiculous. I have mixed emotions about it because on one hand, obviously, I'm happy to have some form of football. But on the other hand, when you look at it from a logical standpoint, it shouldn't be ongoing. In Belarus, apparently, the authorities are dismissing the virus. They're calling it a psychosis. They've not enforced the lockdown at all. And the government in general has just been giving they've been using the media platforms to just say that, hey, look, don't take this too seriously. Just wear your mask and go about your day on a daily basis like you usually do and things will be fine. The thing is, they have now officially confirmed a first death due to COVID-19 in the country. But apparently, the number is a lot higher and they're just quelling the number. FIFPro, the World Football Player Association, has come out and criticized the decision to continue the league. A lot of individuals and organizations within the football industry have called them out publicly and asked them to stop the league as well. But it's not stopping. It's ongoing at the moment. And the effect of Belarusian football ongoing is that it's started gaining support and popularity all around the world, Ross, including in Malaysia as well. You've got a community of people who are watching Belarusian football these days.
Let me bring in Bob Holmes here. Bob, it's crazy. We heard FIFPro have had their say. I was reading a player's account. He says, to be honest, during the 90 minutes when you're playing the game, you don't think about it. But immediately when the full-time whistle blows, it's like every alarm bell in you set off.
Yeah, I can believe that. It's a pretty good description. Players say that anyway, don't they? If they have marital problems or some other issue going on, during the 90 minutes, they switch off and they concentrate solely on the game. And that's a great thing that you can do that. But this is a bit more serious. And I think it will only take a few more deaths that they can't cover up for them to think twice about this. Belarus, okay, it is a little bit isolated. We don't know many people there. We don't know much about the place and all that. There's not much inter-travel between there and the rest of the world, it appears. So that's how they're getting away with it. And they have a remarkably low tally of victims. But we've seen this thing rise from nothing in other countries. And it doesn't take long before it builds up into the hundreds and then the thousands. So I doubt if they're going to be able to finish this season. I mean, like Keish, I've got mixed feelings. I mean, if there's hardly anybody in the country that's died, and you think, well, why, you know, why create this fuss? Why not play? I can see that argument, but I think reality is going to catch up with them eventually, and I think they're going to have to, you know, bow to it.
According to the Belarusian authorities, only one person's died, and he was 75-year-old Belarusian actor Viktor Dekhievich. He lives in Vitebsk, and they've isolated the town. Apparently, everything is safe. But Craig, have you got a favorite Belarusian team?
I don't as yet, but I'm waiting for Keish to advise me on that. Although I read at the start of this whole thing that apparently the president, I think, of Belarus came out and said, oh, there's nothing to worry about here. We're just going to wash our hands and drink vodka and everything will be okay. And actually, I have had homemade Belarusian vodka and I can confirm its potency. So I don't know what it might do to the virus, but it certainly did something to me. So you know, it may be on that basis that they're carrying on. But yeah, it has become this sort of global phenomenon as everybody, you know, seeks to fill the football void in their lives. I must admit that I haven't tuned in as yet, but this weekend might be the weekend.
Yeah. Keish, I swam or vodka?
You're putting me in a tough spot, Ross. Unlike Craig, unlike Bob, I'm very much a citizen of this country. I'm very much, subservient to traditional Indian parents. So I might keep that option. Rather private at the moment, Ross. What I will say, right, is that go to Google, search for the Belarusian football generator. Take the generator. It'll ask you a few questions based on your preferences in football style and color and a number of other things. And at the end of it, it will randomly assign you to a football club based on the choices that you made. And that then becomes the club that you're supposed to defend for the remainder of this MCO. And the club that I got was FC Belshina Bobruisk.
Easy for you to say.
And obviously Keish, I had to get the Keish club that was right, rooted at the bottom of the table.
Do you think by the end of the season, we'll be able to have a big shout on Belarus football?
I think we really would be able to. I'm not even waiting till the end of the season, Bob. Give us 3 more weeks. We will know everything about Belarusian football, not just Alexander Hleb.
I do know that their top team is a team called FC Slutsk. That's spelled slut with an SK at the end. They've got a worldwide FC Slutsk fan page on Facebook. It's already got 2,000 followers. 2001, I've just joined.
I feel like that probably existed before this somehow. You know, there was some interest in that before COVID-19. I also read as part of this whole phenomenon that one of the managers in the league came out and said, we try not to cough on each other. And I think those are words to live by in general, are they not?
That's absolutely brilliant. And I mean, FC Slutsk is actually playing Belshina this weekend. So it's top versus bottom in Belarus.
Come on, you bottom side.
Come on, you Belshina. Yeah, bottom side indeed.
I mean, it's quite crazy. They're talking about 8,000-seater capacity stadiums. And you know, for the top of the table clash, even if half of that is full, that's quite crazy, right? I mean, but like Bob says, it's an isolated country. They don't get a lot of people going in and out. Are there lots of there are Belarusian players abroad, right?
I think Alexander Hleb.
That's the only Belarusian one we all know.
Yeah. Played for Barcelona, didn't he? And Arsenal briefly.
Incidentally.
I understand Barcelona, but Arsenal.
A flight to Belarus to watch the football, right? Does that count as essential or non-essential travel? I'm asking for a friend.
Keish could probably get us discounts.
Yeah, I'm trying to still establish this membership, this official fan club in Malaysia. And once it gets accredited with the club in Belarus itself, I'll let you know if you can get discounts. Great.
Brilliant stuff. Right, we're going for a final break. When we come back, we're going to talk about everybody's favourite Northern team, Newcastle United, next.
Fine save by the goalkeeper, spreading himself.
On the ball on BFM 89.9.
You cannot win a title without an outstanding goalkeeper, and he's been absolutely brilliant.
On the ball on BFM 89.9.
Hey, thanks for sticking with us. Craig Wilkie, Bob Holmes and Keish Nunn are in their homes, very nicely distancing themselves socially from everybody else, just like they do normally, actually. We're talking about Newcastle United. There's been a lot of talk. Apparently, a £16 million deposit has been lodged with Mike Ashley. He said non-returnable straight away, understandably, Mike Ashley style. And so it's serious. It's going ahead. There's been a lot of talk about Saudi ownership. I'm going to bring Bob in immediately. Bob, I mean, are they going to pass the fit and proper owners test?
Well, it looks as if the British government has already passed the buck on this. They're saying they're not going to interfere. Now, we didn't expect anything less, did we? So it's up to the league. And this, they've just been delivered with a real curveball by the rival broadcasters, BN Sports, who have written a letter to the Premier League questioning the validity of this bid and acceptability, really, because Saudi Arabia are behind the leading pirates of Premier League broadcasting. And the Premier League has set out its stall to crack down on piracy in a big way. And for them to accept the country that is behind it would be the height of hypocrisy. But it's a difficult decision for them because they traditionally don't interfere on these matters unless there isn't enough money there. Well, of course, there is more than enough money, Saudi Arabia behind it. They're only taking 80%, but it's the state sovereign fund. So it is the country, it is the government. And there are two British billionaires, brothers, who are also involved taking 10%, and Amanda Staveley, who's Miss Fixit, she's taking 10%. But it's primarily Saudi Arabia. So what you have here is a classic dilemma. I wouldn't like to be deciding on this, I have to say. Do you take the high moral ground and say, no, we're not having Saudi Arabia in here? Or do you just say, no, it's market forces, you know, they've got the money, you know, they've got the deal, let it go. So you've got the two issues. You've got piracy and you've got the moral side of things. And it boils down to the dispute between Qatar and Saudi, because Qatar have got BN Sports and Saudi Arabia have got the curiously named B Out Q Sports. It absolutely taking the mitre out of this. And they stream and pirate all the BN broadcasts from Qatar. So I can understand BN Sports being upset about this. But then Qatar hasn't got much of a leg to stand on either.
Well, exactly.
When it bought the World Cup. So there we are. I mean, you wouldn't want to be Richard Masters, the new boss of the EPL, would you?
Yeah. Craig, they've brought in even Amnesty. If Amnesty come out and feel the need to say something about, they've said something like, obviously it's going to be sports washing that's going to go on here. That's quite a serious accusation. But I want to add the caveat that apparently last year, the Premier League fast-tracked the new ownership of Sheffield United, Saudi owners. that happened in January last year.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it sort of feels like the horse has already left the stable on this one from that point of view. Amnesty, I mean, they're doing their job in terms of raising the issue. I think they do this every time something comes up that's connected, not just with Saudi, but with the Middle East in general, and trying to raise their own profile as an organization. And I'm conflicted about this, to be honest. I mean, first of all, I don't know if anybody's ever failed the fit and proper person test for managing a club in the Premier League. It seems quite a low bar that you have to get over in order to do that. But, you know, as a football fan, and let's try and put ourselves in the shoes of Newcastle United fans right now, I think it's a bit hypocritical of us. And I'm certainly not going to sit here and say, oh, well, you should be wringing your hands morally about who's about to take over your football club. Arguably, we should be, as fans, more concerned about who owns our clubs and where the money comes from and some of what's behind it. But I think it's very hard as a fan to try and separate that out from the excitement that's going to come with, you know, Newcastle fans are already picking their fantasy teams for next year and who might be involved, who might be signed. And it also becomes very difficult to, where do you draw the line? I think sport sometimes is get held up as this moral, you know, we're supposed to be on a moral crusade, but if we turn the Saudi money away from Newcastle, that's not going to change a thing about what happens in that country.
No.
So I'm not sure it's really football's job to do that, in all honesty.
True. All right, Keish, let's assume this £300 million takeover happens. Newcastle, on the playing field, I've read they're really talking about Rafa coming in. How would you feel if you're Steve Bruce, first of all? But can you imagine the top players that will come in?
No, it's Steve Bruce, it's the end of the story for him. I don't think there's a silver lining here. I think as soon as the takeover is complete, he might or might not even last the season, depending on whether the season resumes. But it's the end of the story for Steve Bruce. And, you know, it's Rafa, or it might even be someone bigger, right? There are rumors of Pochettino being part of the discussion as well. We don't know yet, but this will be an absolute game changer. And the last time something of this magnitude happened in the Premier League, right, when it comes to the level of investment that came into a specific football club, it was probably Manchester City. Look at where they are 10 years on. But I'll tell you something. I think most people would agree with this as well. Man City, when they were taken over by the Qatari owners, are nowhere close to being an incredible football club with so much of identity and history and culture attached to it when you juxtapose it with the Newcastle of today. Newcastle have always been that one club that have always surprised me in terms of the fact that no one has actually went there and taken over the club, because it's one of those clubs that have so much of potential. They've got a massively passionate fan base. They've got an incredible stadium that's capable of producing incredible atmosphere. And there's so much of history attached to this club. All it has needed over the years was just a stable injection of investment to just turn things around at the club. And they're finally going to get it. So on one hand, obviously, I absolutely agree with what Craig was saying, that on one hand, obviously, there's that part that's concerned about football in general and whether English football as well, crossing that line when it comes to this deal. But on the other hand, if you look at it from the point of view of Newcastle fans, like, having gone through what they have over the last 10 years, 15 years, this must be as exciting as it has ever been for a Newcastle fan.
Absolutely. But Bob and I, and in fact, we've been saying it on the show for years, right, Bob? Newcastle, primed to be bought.
Yeah, absolutely. I do beg to differ.
Bob, if you think about it, 300 million is a bit of a bargain, right?
It's a steal, isn't it? A steal. And what this also means, I think, is that Manchester United are not going to be bought by Saudi Arabia or a Saudi Arabian consortium or whatever you want to call it. And they would have gone for 3 or 4 billion, 10 times more than Newcastle. Okay, you could say they've won 10 times more trophies, 10 times, they've got 10 times more importance, 10 times more fans around the world, maybe 100 times. But still, 300 million for a club like Newcastle with 50,000 fans guaranteed for every home game is a steal. But I don't quite agree with Keish there about Newcastle being a bigger club than Man City. They haven't won a trophy for 50 years.
No, Bob, what I mean by that is if you look at the level of support that Newcastle get, right? even before Man City became global, there was already a Toon Army fan base in Malaysia. Newcastle was a more popular club than Man City was when they were taken over by the Qataris. And Newcastle generally has a better crowd. Even now, with all the investment that Man City has had over the last 10 years, they still struggle to pull in the kind of numbers that Newcastle pull in at St. James's Park week in, week out, even when they were in the Championship.
Yeah, in terms of fans, I agree with you, but not in terms of trophies. I mean, City won quite a few things in the Malcolm Allison era in the 60s and 70s, whereas Newcastle won absolutely nothing. So, you know, anyway, that's by the way. But I think we're talking about the moral high ground here. But let's get back to piracy. You see, this is a separate issue.
Yeah.
And if the Premier League gives the green light to the backers of piracy, where does their anti-piracy campaign stand? I mean, basically, it undermines it totally, doesn't it? They've been trying to do this to keep the price up for the broadcasting fee.
Yeah.
So that would crash, wouldn't it?
I don't know. Maybe they'll strike some deal with the Saudis and go, listen, can you just pirate like 30% of the games? but assuming it all goes through, how many years, how soon, how many seasons do you reckon before Newcastle in the Champions League or even winning the title?
Good question. I mean, it depends on how much investment, doesn't it? And just one point on the investment and the money, by the way, is, has anybody checked the oil price recently? Anyway,
they owe us money.
assuming there is a big chunk of money coming in, I think actually what a project like this needs is it needs one big signing early on that really kicks everything off, and then other players start looking at it and thinking, okay, yeah,
okay.
These guys are,
let's wrap up with that one big signing. Do you know who I reckon? I'll tell you last. Let's start with you, Keish. Who's your one big signing for Newcastle United?
Oh, my word. This is incredibly premature. It's so difficult to pick a shout like this. But honestly, if I'm Newcastle right now, I'm going to go for a young, for a world-class established talent that every other big club is rooting for, but not necessarily can afford in a football world post-COVID-19. I'd go for Jadon Sancho.
Okay. Jadon Sancho. Bob, you got one on your mind?
Well, it won't be Harry Kane now, will it? I don't think. I mean, you know, City bought Robinho, didn't they, on the last day of the transfer
first big
window.
Money, right?
He was big then, actually. I mean, he's been a failure since then, of course, but he was actually quite big at the time. I think they need to go bigger than Jadon Sancho, even, to make that sort of impact.
Okay, that's a non-answer from
Bob.
Craig, who would you sign, Craig?
I'm going to take a left field pick and go with Gareth Bale.
Ooh.
He can afford his wages.
Yeah, okay. And I'm going to tell you the ideal Newcastle United signing, once they have their millions in the bank, would be Santiago Nunes from the Gold Trilogy. He's Newcastle through and through, Jeremy. Bring an old hero back.
They already have him, Ross.
On that note, I'm going to say thanks to the guys. We're done here. So thank you, Craig Wilkie.
Thank you very much, Bob.
Thank you, Bob Holmes.
Thanks, everyone.
And thank you, Keish.
Cheers, Ross. Stay safe, guys.
Yep. Everybody, have a great weekend. Stay safe. I'll speak to you on Monday. Bye-bye.
Some people are on the pitch. They think it's all over. It is done.
Follow BFM Football on Facebook and catch On The Ball next Friday on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.